Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Hello, everybody. This is Joe Pernesti, and I want to welcome you to another edition of Main Street Firefighting on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. Again, want to always thank Chief Bobby Halton and the staff at Fire Engineering for giving me this opportunity to interview and speak with some of the people that I think we all need to, we can all learn something from, and to hopefully change some things or look at how we're all doing things a little differently in our departments. And this one for sure today, we're not going to talk so much about tactics, but more of training and utilizing modern technology. And today I welcome Battalion Chief Dave Decker of the Newark, Ohio Fire Department. If you are a student of the game, I guarantee you have seen his videos on the websites or on YouTube. And I think it's just refreshing because the chief brings it from a different standpoint. He is not a photographer, or not meaning this in a derogatory way, a buff that is going to fires that isn't a member of the fire department. He is a chief officer. And not only is he running a fire, he's videotaping it so we all can learn from that. And I was really excited when he accepted to be on the show. So Chief Decker, thank you very much for being on my my show. And if you would, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm happy to be here. I'm honored and humbled. I am a firefighter for the city of Newark, currently serving as an assistant chief. I started in 1990. I knew from the time that I was a child that I wanted to be a firefighter, and I was very fortunate that I moved through the process quickly and was hired on at a very young age. So I've been with the Newark Fire Department for 30 years. For those people that are not familiar with Newark, it's a city of about 50,000, but it's a very old city. There is a large area of the city that is old construction, a lot of two-story balloon frame homes. So we do have some growth in different areas, but I would say the majority of what people would see in my videos is our normal day-to-day stuff, two-story balloon frames.
That is why I'm so happy to have you on, because not only are we sharing your information and the reasons why you video and train. I'm excited because Elyria and Newark, and for our listeners that maybe for the first time, I'm from the city of Elyria, Ohio, Fire Department, Northern Ohio, and Elyria and Newark are identical all the way around. The type of housing, the socioeconomic makeup of the communities, and so your fires are like my fires, but your fires are also like everyday America also. Chief, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, if it would get going here, is what started you along as to why you wanted to video, and not only video, but then just put it out there for everyone to see?
Well, as I promoted up through the ranks, obviously, I take the job very seriously. I wanted to do everything in my capability to be the best that I could possibly be. So initially, I just began to record myself, and I would come home and review those videos, and I would see if I was articulating my instructions correctly. Was I hearing people on the radio the first time they marked me? I think that's a very important thing. If you have somebody inside of a house that's on fire, They shouldn't have to mark command two or three times. Right. So a lot of it was just me trying to hone my skill and ask myself, you know, is there a way that I can do things better? Am I being clear with my instructions? Did I say the right thing at the right time? So it was a lot of me just trying to become a better incident commander, which is obviously I think is extremely important. The last thing I want to do is get somebody hurt under my command. So I was trying to improve my capabilities. And as I began to look at these videos, I thought, this probably could be used by other people. You know, if I'm using this to become a better person, I'm guessing there's other lieutenants or captains or battalion chiefs or assistant chiefs or whatever that are just dying to get another nugget of information. I know that I look forward to reading the next NOSH fatality report, not because I enjoy that, but because I want to learn what's killing our people and how can we prevent that. And so I thought about that. I thought, this is kind of selfish that I'm not putting this out there so maybe other officers can learn, especially those that do not have the experience or the call volume.
Was there any resistance to you doing this? I could just imagine in my own department, there every fire department, big or small, has the naysayers or the, you know, those that want to be critical, especially of chiefs. No matter what you say or do, there's always going to be someone that is going to be critical. Was there any pushback or did you catch any grief from the troops when you started doing this and putting them out on social media or on YouTube?
As far as my team that I work with, I've received no pushback. We have always trained very hard. And I would like to preface this as saying, I'm just one member of the team. I just have a different job to do. I work with a great group of people at the Newark Fire Department. And the men and women on one unit all train very hard to try to give it 100% on every single call. So the team, there was absolutely no pushback. As far as the chief or the deputy chief of the department, there has been no pushback. Now, there was a question raised about the ethics of the video. So we are very careful to not show anything that would violate somebody's privacy. We are very careful about not going inside of a home and showing pictures or video inside of a home. But for the most part, my chief supports this 100% and believes that there is definite value to this.
Yeah, I applaud your department, your chief, in doing that. Before we started the podcast, the Chief Decker and I were discussing, you know, the public records portion of it. And when you watch, you see every day dash cam video or, you know, it's always on the law enforcement side. And I think that there are some chiefs out there, fire chiefs, that are reluctant just for the fact that any John Doe can come into the fire department and say, give me that tape. Well, with you, they're going to see a fire. And you're not, you know, I think that's where if you're a fire chief listening to this, I guess my two cents would be this, is that as long as you're not, like Chief Decker said, you're not invading privacy or HIPAA laws and you're showing a fire that any citizen standing on the sidewalk can watch or film, it's just coming from a fire department video or a firefighter's, you know, piece of equipment that's doing this, recording this, that I just don't see John Q. Public looking at this the same as they would a traffic stop that goes awry in the police side. And there's, you know, the physical altercations and all that, you know, that the media and all that want to see. I just don't see the same thing on our side. I think it's more for the news media, they see the action part, but for firefighters, they see the learning part. And I think we're talking apples and oranges here as far as public records and all that, but that's just my opinion. I'm glad that your department is so supportive of it. Chief Decker, has there ever been a fire where when you're taping it, you're saying to yourself, oh boy, probably, you know, and you're caught with a dilemma of, do I put this out or not? As far as tactics, strategy, or, you know, tactics at the scene.
I would say no. First of all, after I arrive on scene and point the camera or whatever, I pretty much forget about it. I do my normal thing. And I have numerous videos of the sides of fire trucks or civilians standing in front of the command car or whatever. I can't allow that to distract me from the number one job at hand, which is commanding the fire scene and keeping the troops safe. But I can always go back and either edit a portion of the video or just choose to can the whole thing if there is not much of a learning value to it. But if it's something where, you know, maybe it just didn't go as smooth as we had hoped, I believe there's learning value to that, because I think everybody in the fire service has to know that, number one, there's more than one way to put a fire out, and number two, we're all human. So we're going to make mistakes. I'm still learning. I would say everybody that is humble would say that they're still learning. Until the day that you walk out that door and hang it up, you're still learning. So I hit the record button. When we arrive on scene, I aim it, try to get it aimed in the right direction, and then I just forget about it. And then afterwards, I like to use that documentation to create my fire report and all that, and then I can make a decision. Do I need to edit or blur something out or whatever?
I think one of the things that what's so great about your videos is that I'm a student of the job like you and many others, and I love looking at video and breaking video down. The problem that I see, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, are I think we live in an age where social media, you have, let's say, a firefighter that is in their 20s, and they've grown up in social media, and that's how they conduct themselves. And social media also brings a bit of harshness, being critical of everything, whether it's fire related or politics or whatever. There's always that, you know, one person that loves to go on there and be critical. What I worry about is how firefighters look at video today, that you do it right. And I want firefighters and officers to learn by just watching a video and saying, what would I do if this fire was in my community, or if I was in charge, or the first in engine? Not, hey, those guys didn't pull that line right, or why are they up on the roof, or, you know, those kind of things. That there has to be, a mentor of mine stated once that you have to look at video as like a witness and not like a prosecutor. And that's true. And just curious your thoughts on that. With today's society, today's young firefighters, they're on their phones, they're looking at videos. How do we tell them, hey, listen, firefighter Smith, look at this from a view of how you would fight it, that a neutral type of thought rather than what they're doing wrong?
Yeah, I can tell you, number one, you have to have thick skin, because I do get a lot of that. Okay. Now, with that being said, I firmly believe that if somebody wants to get on there and say, hey, I think you could have done this, as long as they're being respectful, we can have that discussion, because I think it's important. That is also a good learning tool. You know, somebody can say, hey, you know, why wouldn't you pull a 2.5, you know, in this particular circumstance? Or I get a lot of questions, why don't you guys ever go to the roof and you know, do roof ops? So until people know the full story, they won't understand why we do it this way in Newark. However, we can have that conversation, or we can have those replies and comments, as long as we keep it respectful. Now, when people get on YouTube and they start making comments, and they're just throwing mud balls, I just block that person and delete it, because there's no learning there at all. There's nothing that we can gain from somebody, you know, that just wants to bash the fire department. Oh my goodness, it took them 57 seconds to get water on the fire. It's okay, 57 seconds, partner, is not bad. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I am a firm believer that somebody from another department who does not know anything about Newark Fire Department, they may have a very legitimate question. Hey, why aren't you guys going to the roof and doing vertical ventilation? You know, and we can have that discussion, because like I said, there's more than one way to put out fire, and everybody is trained a little bit different. As long as everybody is respectful and can understand that and appreciate that, I'm all about that piece of the learning puzzle, because I believe there is value to that.
I just wanted to bring up, because you hit on this, is that what is the minimum staffing in Newark?
So our minimum staffing is 16. We have three stations. So we have a medic unit, a transport medic unit, and a fire apparatus at each of the three stations. And I can tell you, we run a lot of EMS calls. Medic 1 is extremely busy. It's very normal for Medic 1 to take 16 EMS calls in a 24-hour shift. So we rely on a lot of mutual aid. If you notice on these fires, on every working fire, there's mutual aid coming in to assist us, because we have a set minimum. We have three engines, a ladder, a medic, and a battalion chief on the initial call. And when they upgrade it to a working fire, we get two additional engines and another medic unit. And that's just for a residential. That's not even a commercial. So we work with our mutual aid partners very closely. And, you know, I know these guys by their first name, because we see them so frequently.
Right.
So that's another component of it that I think is good for, you know, there's a lot of departments out there that says, man, we just don't have the staffing. They need to understand we don't have the staffing either. But we work closely with our mutual aid partners in order to accomplish that mission.
Well, and that is the point of when you're looking at fires, or you're looking at videos of fires, that we have to keep pushing on those watching to get anything out of it. If you're going to use it for a learning experience, is that Newark, you have 16 on duty, one of which is you, and then a pump operator. So you have about 15 or 14 people to work with if they're not on squad calls. I have to take that as my city as an example. We have a minimum staffing of 14. I have to say, okay, well, how would I handle that with 14? And so if someone watching your video from, let's say, Detroit or New York or St. Louis, that's bringing 20, 30 people to a fire, they can take that same building and apply their tactics on how they would handle it based on their staffing and not be critical. And so that is the key that I think that you bring an example to, that, hey, listen, here it is. This is what we do. And you allow discussion, which is great, but you also are hitting home on the fact that every department is different. And if you want to vertically ventilate based on your procedures and size up, have at it. But you know, there's a lot of departments that are watching your videos and learning from your videos that show up with 10 or, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, that they can learn other things. One of the other things that I wanted to touch on that I really like that you do for our listeners that have not seen Chief Decker's videos is that he shows pictures of the building or the house prior to the fire. So he utilizes online, you know, Google Earth or whatever you want to use, mapping, to show you what the building looks like in the light of day and what it looks like before fire. And so that helps tremendously too, that you can see what you're doing and size up and everything based on that, and taking that to the training ground of, you know, your computer. That's a smart play.
I believe there's a lot of value to that. A lot of these fires are at nighttime, so it's hard to even see the dimensions of the building, let alone they're not seeing a 360 or whatever. So that was viewer feedback. I've had a lot of really good ideas from viewer feedback. They might say, "Hey, is there any way that we could get you to get a helmet camera and you can do a 360?" So anything that I can do to help these people, absolutely. So I have a helmet camera. Now it's just a matter of me getting in the habit of turning the thing on. So right. We all got to work together. You know, we all have to help train up the next generation, because I don't know about you, but I'm hoping to retire in the very near future and just be able to relax and do some fishing.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm in the same boat as you. I started in 89. So our careers have pretty much mirrored each other. As far as the experience and time on. When you started out, one of the things that your videos bring is you pretty much stay, well, I don't want to say you always stay, but your philosophy on your command post. Do you always stay in your vehicle at command post? And I've seen some videos where you've stepped out and you've gotten out of your vehicle. But has that changed in your thoughts and your career as being a commander and staying in your vehicle commanding rather than this front sidewalk?
I'm glad you asked that, because I get a lot of questions about, hey, why don't you get out of the car? Or, you should be staying in the car. That's the place to be. The vast majority of the training that I've taken tells me that I should be staying in the car, especially if there were to be a mayday or if the situation goes south. And I got to be real honest, I don't have a hard set rule on which direction to go. I just have to go with my gut. We recently had a fire on Essex Street where I opted to get out of the vehicle and conduct a 360, and then I was standing there giving assignments, and then suddenly I could hear somebody screaming. And it wasn't somebody yelling for more hose line or bring a ladder. This was somebody that sounded like that they were injured. And because I was out of the vehicle, I was able to hear that. I immediately checked on my companies that were going interior. They told me they were okay. So I started doing another 360, and we discovered that a person had jumped from the second floor and landed in the backyard and was seriously injured and in need of help. So, I think a lot of it has to do with your experience and the training that you have received. And I'm not going to condemn anybody for doing one right. or the other, because again, I think it goes back to what are you comfortable with?
Right.
I can tell you that when it starts getting really crazy, I like to go back to the command car and roll up the windows and yep. I ignore civilians because, I've got people coming up and tapping on the window. Hey, I think there's an old man living in there. It's like, I don't right. need those distractions. So, right. but again, I'm not going to condemn anybody for choosing to stand on the sidewalk or choosing to lock themselves in the command car. It all goes back to what your trainee has told you to do and what is your comfort level. And we all do this just a little bit differently.
Yeah, agreed 100%. I have done it both ways. I've been a command officer for over 21 years now, and I've done it both ways. And I find that if things go south, you need to be in that vehicle. And I agree. It's a comfort thing. I think we're switching to that. I think you're getting a lot of change to where it is that you do what you feel good, that there isn't one. I think a few years back with certain, with blue card and all that is stationary command, stay in your vehicle. And that pushing of staying in your vehicle, I think has now changed to you do you. That as long as you're at a fixed command post, whether it's in a vehicle or at a sidewalk with a command board and all that, you do you based on your experience and your training. And so I'm glad you answered that, and that, you're sharing with our listeners what, the reasons why. Chief Decker, now one thing that I really respect about you as we start to wrap things up is you get compensated from YouTube, but you don't get compensated. You give it to charity or to a cause, and I really commend you for that. I think our listeners, knowing that, should want to go to your videos all the time and grab them and show them and train on them because you do that, because I think there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they could take advantage of this and, hey, watch my video. Oh, by the way, you know, I'm making money. I commend you for that. That right there, brother, is a great, great quality, and you should be commended for that. If you would tell our listeners what you donate to, or, you know, how that all worked out.
Okay. So anytime you put a video on YouTube, after it reaches a certain number of viewers, or, and it has to be, you know, so many minutes in length, you can monetize that video, and basically Google or YouTube, however you want to say it, will send you a check in order to put advertisements on there. And I have no control of the advertisements. So if it's a campaign advertisement, I can't control if it's Republican or Democrat, or whatever the advertisement might be for. I have no control over that. I am just of the frame of mind, if there's an opportunity to gain a little bit of money there and we can help somebody out, why don't we go ahead and do that? That's not to say that if somebody needed a good, clean piece, I could upload it to a private link. You know, if there was a fire department that said, look, is there any way that I can download this so I've got, you know, the whole video or whatever, I would be more than happy to cooperate. But I'm just of the frame of mind, if there's money to be made out there, we definitely have an opportunity to help somebody. And so the two charities that I donate to, number one is our Newark Firefighter Charities. We have a long history of helping kids. We've got some great guys at Newark Fire Department. They purchase winter coats every winter to pass out to underprivileged children or needy families, or whatever you want to call that. We help. We make food donations. Of recent, though, we've had a couple of our gentlemen that have really struggled with mental health issues. And they went to the Save a Warrior program, and I'm telling you, it absolutely saved their lives. Wow. These guys were just in a very dark spot, and they could not see the light out. So we were able to get them the help. We're very fortunate that we have a Save a Warrior camp very close to the city of North. But that cost about $2,500 to send one guy through that. And wow. And speaking with the gentleman that run the Newark Firefighters Charities, he said it would really be good if we could pay them back for that. And I said, I'm going to help you make that happen. So I have been donating 50% of the proceeds to the Newark Firefighter Charities because we quasi owe them for two guys that they saved their lives, you know, and helped our organization in a big way. And I have to be real honest, there's probably other firefighters out there that are going to need to go through this program, but they are doing wonderful work, not just with firefighters, but with all first responders, and also with military personnel, whether it be active or veterans or whatever. So Newark Firefighter Charities is doing great work with kids that need winter coats, with families that need food, with firefighters that need some therapy to help get them out of that dark spot. The other 50%, I've been donating to a group called Fostering Further and what's called Starting Strong. My wife and I have adopted three children. So we've been involved with the foster care system for quite some time now. As a matter of fact, the first few children that we adopted, they're now grown up and they have their own children. But my wife sits on the board of Fostering Further, which is an agency that would help kids in foster care get items that the foster family would not normally be able to afford. But they have since developed a branch of this, which is called Starting Strong. Starting Strong helps kids that age out of the foster care system basically become self-sustaining adults. Most people aren't familiar with the foster and adoption situation in America or in their local area, but it's something as simple as foster kids are not allowed to get their driver's license while they're in foster care because they worry that these kids will basically steal a car and drive away, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then a lot of foster kids, when they turn 18, those foster families basically boot them out and say, hey, good luck to you. And they instantly become homeless. So it's a horrible situation to be in. So Starting Strong is they're trying to basically help these kids. They're trying to help them complete college applications. They're buying computers so they can have them to go to college. Maybe they're helping them get a used car so they can drive themselves to work. They're trying to build a group home right now where a group of adults who just aged out of the system would learn life skills, and there would be a mentorship program at that group home where we can help get those kids on the right path to become self-sustaining adults and productive members of society. So that they get 50% of the proceeds also.
If everybody was as I tell you, that is, I'm blown away. Chief, when you retire, do you see your person taking your spot continuing the filming and extending your legacy of sharing your events to the world?
I would hope so. I can't guarantee that because I'm not recording based on a directive by the fire chief. It's just one of those things that I enjoy doing. I think it's helpful to the community. The chief enjoys it. I think that it lets the community know that we're working our butts off. So it's not like that somebody else will be ordered to start videoing.
Right.
But I got to be honest, I hope somebody does it at Newark, and I would love to see other departments around the world start doing this because we all have a little bit of something that we can contribute to help keep each other safe. So I'm hoping somebody does it.
Chief, I want to thank you, and what a class act. I wish I've gotten to know you earlier than this. If people want to reach out to you, or want to go to your videos, that someone listening to this has never heard about your videos, how can they find your videos and how can they reach out to you if they have questions or want, you know, clear videos or just want to ask you some questions? Because I'm going to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, listen to this. I think this gentleman's got it all wrapped up right as far as incident command, handling a shift, and basically living life. So, Chief, how can people get a hold of you?
If you jump on Google or YouTube and you just simply Google David Decker, North Ohio Fire Department, it will direct you to those videos pretty easily. And then in the description of all of my videos, I include all of my contact information, and I also put a disclaimer in there that anybody could use these videos for training purposes. They don't have to contact me. I put them up there for that very specific reason. I'm hoping somebody can use these videos to help keep our brothers and sisters safe out there. But my contact information is in there, and if there's something that somebody needs, you know, if I can help them in any way, please shoot me an email, and I will try to get back to you as quickly as I can.
Chief, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and stay safe.